Yes, I have it now. The two plots that you sent me and a bunch of numbers in a table.
Right.
Actually, more plots. Yeah, I see more plots and more tables. Okay, lots of
Okay.
tables. Yes.
Define the question. Okay, so this is the one.
Yeah.
Right. So I label the plots and the tables. So first, I'm going to walk you through the things that I did to improve the performance and then show you where I am, because I want to make sure that the steps that I took make sense.
Yeah, let's do it.
Right, so let's first look at the figure one.
Okay.
The figure one is a comparison of memory OpenFS and PMLib. Let's for now forget the PMLib and CL flush. So that was the one that I was doing slightly worse after I increased the numbers. The original benchmark, I modified the numbers so that it takes longer, so we have more time to compare.
Okay, good. Yeah. Oh, I see. We are running up to 90 seconds.
Right.
But there are some which are still like sub 10, 5 seconds, which like T0, T1, T12, 13, 16.
Yes,
They are.
and that makes sense because those are very, very fast operations. They should be very quick.
Okay.
So I do some profiling on the library,
Okay.
and I noticed that the first thing that I noticed was that there was I was spending a lot of time on the checkpoint operation, specifically in the part that checkpoints the last two levels of the tree. So the checkpoint operation travels from the root to the leaf nodes. I think it's using a breadth first search, something like that. I don't remember which one of the two. But at the last two levels, it was spending most of the time there. Specifically, there was an each condition in the function that's very small that was taking like 20% of the time of the entire function, in if condition. So what I did, if you're interested in the details, I added a link to the diff.
Okay, yeah, I can click through that and see.
You're going to have to log into the Scilab.
Yeah, I see it.
Right, so you see the green lines are lines that have been added. The red ones, lines have been deleted. So,
Yeah.
okay. You see that if statement that is just
542?
blank, there's not. Line 488.
488. Okay, yes. Yeah, but that doesn't have a red or a green.
Right. So this if statement was taking a long time. And it's a simple check, just checking a couple of integers. I guess it was doing some cache flush, cache misses and things like that. I don't know what's going on. But the solution was that in this, first, if we go to the slab.h, so the last block, you see that I added some metadata to the slash bucket.
Yeah.
They have snapshot. And basically, when I do snapshot, I make that equal to 1. And then I use that metadata so that I check in this function the slab intercept point.
Yeah.
I check if it has been a snapshot and do all this only if it has been a snapshot.
Yeah.
So only that change, that small change, improved the performance a lot
Okay, and
by a
so
significant factor.
I see. So we go down to the memory line then. With that improvement.
That improvement only affected test number one. You see that in test number one were much faster.
So which
Even
sorry, which line am I looking at and which figure?
we are looking at the red line, but specifically in the test one.
Oh, okay, yeah.
See, we are still much faster. We reduce the time there a lot, and this is the test that performs many small transactions.
So
they basically improved the performance of the checkpoint operations for small transactions. And my understanding of what this does is that, you know, the whole slab allocator is like a tree, right? So every level you have exponentially many more nodes. So by adding a little bit of the data at a higher node, a higher level, I basically don't have to go to the lower node there and do that check exponentially many more times. And that by itself reduced the time of that test by a lot. Notice that if you look at table one, BNSS takes on that takes 8 seconds, and we take 1.7 seconds. So if we click on the other link, the very field flash, the improvement there was, after reading the code of BNSS, I confirmed that they do what we expected and what we expected them to be doing, which is basically use the flush operation as a hint to tell, hey, you need to flush this, you need to flush this, you need to flush this.
Yeah.
And being very strategic about ways where to position the fence.
Yeah.
Specifically the F fence.
Right.
But it makes some improvement on that. For instance, the first block in the atomic testing, you see that there is a loop that was calling the simulation flush. Now I'm calling the flush. Now I'm calling the flush. So this flush takes two parameters, the memory address that you want to flush and the flag. If it's zero, I don't fence. If it's one, I also do a fence follow.
Okay.
I follow the flush with a fence.
Mm-hmm.
So this loop that we see here is for the main copy of persistent memory, which are no longer issuing a memory fence.
Okay.
Because in the checkpoint at the lowest level, what happens is you first make a copy of the page, then update the pointer, and then issue the fence. So I do the main copy, flush everything, update the pointer, flush the point, and then after that I do the fence. So that's why we're no longer issuing a fence on the main copy. Of course, I also verify that logic is the same everywhere else. So you see that the atomic set flag and the atomic clear flag, all that change. Before, we just have a couple of fences, and now we have the assignment, and we flush.
Okay.
And we assign, we flush, and we, of course, call the flag for one because we want a fence. These are atomic operations, right?
Yeah, so... So earlier we would do this fence, set the information and then fence again, right? That's what we would do.
Yes, we would fence, set the pointer and fence again, which didn't make a lot of sense.
The reason we did that was because we wanted to ensure that all the memory accesses prior to setting the value were already in persistent memory before we set the flag, right? And then we do a fence again to make sure that future accesses don't get interchanged with this setting of the bit array here. So here now, by avoiding the fence before we set the bit array, what are we losing is what I am worried about.
So, I don't think the previous fence make any sense. We do the update, fence, and then flush. I mean, we do the update, flush, and then fence.
Oh, flush.
I think that is the correct order.
We
update,
we
flush,
do the
and then fence.
Well, we do the update.
Flush the pointer, and then fence. That is that now we're calling flush with the one, and you see the definition of flush right at the end. So we in the flush unconditionally issues the CO flush, and then conditionally issues the S fence.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Yeah, makes
And that
sense.
macro is just some statistics that I keep track of in case we care about that.
Yeah, except that I see a problem here.
Okay.
Do we have an ordering requirement where line everything prior to line, let's look at line 8 in atomics dot h,
Okay.
that where you change the address. Prior to changing the address, do you need all the data that you wrote to be in persistent memory or not?
Actually, the macro is used to set the flag at the beginning of the consistent point at the checkpoint. So now this is the atomic set flag. It's only used to set that flag. Remember the flag that we set at the beginning of everything and after everything?
Yeah.
So they only use that as of now, which is why I don't think I need the previous fans.
Yeah, let's think about that, okay? So why you think you don't need it? Let's talk about that.
Well, this happens. There are two cases in which this could happen. This is the checkpoint number one or checkpoint number n, where n is bigger than one.
Yeah.
If it is checkpoint number one, I make sure that any other atomic update is followed by a fence, which means that no other write is going to happen after. I mean, it's going to be happen before that previous fence. So that's why I'm enforcing some order. Because every operation that I consider that needs to be atomic, I use my macros, and my macros issue a fence.
Yeah.
And this one will be, certainly, it won't be the first of these atomic operations, because when you call on the checkpoint before that, there will probably were many snapshots of both metadata and database. And all those functions issue use the atomic operation macro, the atomic set of data pointers.
Yeah.
So I
Okay.
think we're in good shape because of that.
So here is one scenario that let me lay it down for you. So you have you have a container and you're making changes. You did a sync at some point in the past and you start making changes to it. And these are all copy on write changes which have not been flushed to persistent memory.
They all have to be flush,
They all have
right?
to be, but why would they be flushed when you make a copy and write? I mean,
Because they're just
they have to be flushed, but they're not fenced.
they are fenced too, of course.
But when you
So
do
when
a
you make
copy and
copy.
write, when you do a copy and write, what happens when you do a write to a page that's protected?
Are we talking about a copy and write of a metadata page or a data page?
Let's say a data page.
Okay. So you do a copy of the page, and then you update the snapshot pointer to the new data page.
Okay.
And of course, you flush both the page and the pointer and follow that with fence.
You have a fence prior to that. And
After the copy and the update of the pointer.
okay. So you do have a fence.
Yes.
So and the what about subsequent writes to that page?
That particular page doesn't get reading anymore because it is now a snapshot page.
Right, so now the current page is being the one that's modified, right?
Right, that one is updated in place. I don't care what
It's
happens to
updated
it.
in place, it's not fenced.
It's
It's
not,
not
no,
flushed or it's not fenced.
it's not really a flush, no offense.
Okay, all right. So the current version of the page in persistent memory may not be the most up to date because there are some updates still stuck in the caches.
Right,
Correct?
and which is okay because that's the current page.
That's a current page. Okay. So now you do a sync.
All right.
Now you do a sync, and the first thing you do is to set flag.
Yes.
And you do a set flag. You set the flag and you do a flush. And then you do a fence.
Yes.
Everything, all the dirty data in the caches prior to the fence could be reordered.
Yes.
Which means that this flag update could show up in persistent memory before the updates to the current page that are still stuck in the cache.
Is that how fence works?
What do you mean?
Oh, I see. So it's possible you're saying that it's possible that the cache contains some of the data
in the current page
that hasn't been flushed.
Yeah, that hasn't.
And that reaches the persistent memory before the actual flag.
The flag reaches earlier.
Okay, so the flag reaches earlier. And you're assuming a crash between that and
yes.
flushing there.
Yes.
I see. So you're saying that you have a fence before that too?
You may need a friend. You may need a... Yeah, I think you need a fence there. But I think we had this discussion earlier. But you could potentially avoid the fences prior when you make a copy of the... And remember, this was the discussion we were having last time about how to change the mappings.
Right.
So that you can eliminate the flushes, and actually you may not eliminate the flush, but you can eliminate the fence when you do copies.
Yes, I eliminate the fence and I postpone the flush to the checkpoint.
Postpone the flush. No, I think you should do the flush. You should postpone the fence to the C point.
No, even the flush I can postpone to the C point.
Because you know which
because
pages are dirty.
The snapshot page never gets modified. Right? And I don't make a copy of it. I basically copy from the snapshot to current.
Yeah, but you need to indicate which pages need to be flushed to persistent memory, right?
Right, and those are the ones that have been snapshotted.
Yes, and so how do you... Oh, so you at the persistence point, at the C point, you actually check what flushes to issue?
I know which page you have been checkpointed, so I know which one I need to flush.
Okay, so yeah, you can even postpone the flush then.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can postpone the flush and the fence if you're able to fix the mapping problem.
Right. I don't think adding an extra fence will have a performance impact. But just these operations don't happen very often.
So Leo, clarify for me if this new idea where you're postponing all the CL flushes and fences, have you already been able to switch the mappings to do that?
No, I haven't done that.
Okay.
If we don't have support from that system goal, it's very tricky. And I was thinking about a way to, not even but you're thinking about a way to do it so that I can avoid at least, by the end of every checkpoint, throw away some of those mappings, have one big continuous mapping, to avoid the overhead, but I haven't come up with a resolution solution yet, so I'm postponing that. Especially, also, we will have to hear back from Zulu, right? Maybe he has a better idea. Maybe he says that it's not that difficult to implement that. I don't know.
Have you written to him?
I haven't done that yet. I think he was out last week.
Okay.
Because last week I spoke to somebody else in a different project. And I think he's in contact with the Lord. And he mentioned that he and other people will be out this week. I mean, last week.
Yeah. Okay.
So yes, I'll talk to him.
One way to do it, I thought, was that if you do page level mappings, do you run out of mappings or what?
Yes, I run out of mappings.
Hmm.
And I don't see a clear way of, like, let's say that in between checkpoints, I could throw away all those mapping and have one big mapping again. right? I haven't found a way to do that, to reset that. Because that way I could have multiple mappings as pages are checkpointed, as pages are snapshotted, so that by the end of the commit, I have many, the pages are no longer in order, right? There are many pages that are out of order. But if there were a way for me to reset that, I have one big mapping again, then maybe I could control how many mappings I have in a given commit.
Why do these pages need to be in order? Mappings need to be in order?
Well, if you have one in order, it's just one mapping, right?
Hmm.
But when they're out of order, then you have to have a specific mapping for every segment.
One way to do that is to have a pre-mapped area of your memory.
Say that again?
If you have a map, but you need memory to actually back that mapping, can you have a mapping without allocating memory to it?
Anonymous mapping?
Yeah, but without memory, physical memory attached to it. I guess if you don't write to it, the one doesn't allocate the memory, right? Physical memory.
I don't think that is guaranteed. I think that's what happens because it's like a lazy allocation.
Hmm.
But I don't think there's any guarantee that it's extremely lazy.
Yeah, what I was thinking of is that if you have an earlier mapping that is contiguous and you need a temporary mapping just to map the snapshot, then you could have like some working mappings that you're pre-allocated and use one of those until the next checkpoint or something like that. I'm not entirely sure how that would work, but yeah, this requires some thinking, but it might be at the core of the optimized copy on write. This is a core, it seems like an optimization for the copy on write, so that especially when you're doing memory flushing for persistent, this is like a copy on write for persistent memory. I mean, I think this is a problem that is very specific to using copy on write with persistent memory, which is probably why it doesn't exist. A solution doesn't exist yet.
I don't think we will save, we'll reduce the number of flushes. But it is clear that we definitely postpone those
fences
to the checkpoint.
Oh yeah, we postpone not just and we postpone the fences because right now you have to do the fence also, right?
Right, and that is very important because it will no longer be in the physical part of the application.
Yeah, because all the fences are the ones that actually flush cache lines, which cause the overhead.
Right.
And if you don't have fences, it doesn't matter how many cache flushes you're issuing.
Right. So, if we go back to figure 2, which is basically throwing away the line from memory, you see that the red line, which is PNLibc on flush, that's the one that contains the optimization. This one, using real flush, minimizing the fences, plus the previous update of improving the C point operation.
Yeah,
so
that you may have to change, right? And you'll get a new line because you need a fence prior to changing the flag.
Right.
So which figure am I looking at? What about figure 1 PMLib underscore CL flush? What is that?
It's the same thing. It's just that I have a second line graph in which I have dots and I no longer plot the memory because it's not very relevant in this discussion.
Yeah. So certainly, I mean, the red one is better than the PMFS, which is for all queries, right?
I think so, yeah.
Well, that's a big improvement.
So table 1 has the results.
Yeah. So if you introduce that M fence, reintroduce that M fence, do you think that red line will go up significantly to the green line?
I don't expect it to be, no.
You don't know?
I don't expect it to go up a lot because it's basically it's called only twice in every commit.
Yeah.
So I don't think it will have a significant impact.
Okay.
So for this size of the benchmark, this is the numbers, and they look very good. Now, notice that I'm not using all the tests, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I tried to run the same with the same configuration, all the tests, it broke. There were some tests that were not working correctly.
Which configuration?
So I did some digging, and what was happening is that there's a test in particular in which I think the one that creates an indexes. And what I was doing is that if the size of the table for which you want to create the indexes is bigger than a certain threshold, then the logic of SQLite creates a temporary file in which source things dump into the file and then operates in the file.
Okay.
Right? And my logic doesn't really support using this temporary file.
Mm-hmm.
So my solution was basically disable that threshold.
Okay.
Basically saying, never create a temporary file. Use what you have. Which, since we are operating in memory, I don't think it's that relevant. So I did that. I tested all the tests. And it ran. And then I got happy and say, well, let's try with a bigger data set.
Yeah.
To see what happens. So I increased everything by 100, by a factor of 100.
Yeah.
And this is what we got. And since I'm back to be bad.
Mm-hmm. What? You mean relative to PMFS?
Yes. So we see figures, we're looking now at figure 3, 4, and 5. Figure 3 plots everything, memory, PMFS, and PLIP.
Yeah.
Figure 4 is PMFS and PLIP. And figure 5 is like figure 4, but using a little bit of bit scale on Y, which didn't help much.
Mm-hmm.
They will have the numbers in the description of their.
Memory is as bad as PMFS and PMLIP.
Right? Yeah, everybody's very close together. In some cases, memory is better, but.
Yeah,
no,
but
I
it's about the same. I mean, all of these are about the same is what I would think.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see a significant difference, which is not a bad thing, but it's not a great thing either because, I mean, we want to sell PMLib for performance as well, ideally. I think that if we...
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. This is misleading information. So the first two graphs, they were run on the PMFS server. These last ones.
Yeah.
Did they run? Yes, this it was run on PMFS server. Yes. This is correct. Okay. Sorry. There is another issue that I'll talk to you later, but this is correct. This was run on PMFS server.
I
so
think
not
that,
much of a difference.
Right. There's not significant difference, which is both a good thing and a not so great thing because we are not doing better than PMFS. So the question is, why change SQLite at all to use PMLib?
Right. So you can look at the details from table 2.
Yeah.
You see that in some cases we're a lot worse. Especially test 5, right? We're a lot worse. Test 6, you're worse. It's not a significantly worse one. Test 15 were worse too, but it's not horrible, but we're supposed to be doing better.
About 10% worse is what, in the worst case, is what I would say. Now, the optimization for PMLib is what I was telling you earlier, where we can postpone the fences whenever we are making changes between PM sync operations. I think that's, so for instance, we look at test 5, right, where we do, there's a select transaction.
Yeah.
A select transaction, does it make any changes to the container? Or is it, does it do any writes?
Yeah, it does. No, I don't think it does. I think it's just a select, but it's using a field of the table in which you have to operate with strings, which is why it's not slow.
Because it select transaction and then creates a new write
so
something
the,
or updates.
The is like you have a table with, I think the format of the table is two integers and a string.
Yeah.
And then you select, I think, as many as 100 using the text field, but using a regular expression. It's like, say, an string that matches this expression. That's why it's so slow. Because you have to apply regular expressions on tables. And I don't think you have an index on that string field, which is why it's so slow.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is true that we are slower, but not that much, honestly. But we should be doing better.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that we have way too many fences because of the copy and write. The way we do copy and write. It's introducing additional fences than what we need. So I think one of the key optimizations for us could be that, you know, it could be to figure out how to make copy and write copies without issuing M fences. When you have, well, anyway, I think this is something for us to discuss a little bit more. I think it's good to see all this data that you've collected, and let's.
Does it make sense for us to expect to be no better than vanilla?
Than memory.
When reading?
Than memory, you mean?
No better than PinoFest when reading. It says just a read operation, right?
Yeah. Well, even there, I think we have a reduction in the number of mem copies between the file system and the
SQL. Not really, right? Because keep in mind that the read operation, the vanilla implementation uses a cache.
Yeah.
And this cache is in volatile memory, non-persistent memory.
Yeah.
Which means that it doesn't suffer from the performance of PMFS, persistent memory.
Yeah. Yeah, but you do have to make one copy, whereas in our case, we do, there's no copy.
That is true. Like, you do have to make one copy, but
into the cache.
If you get a popular page, then you get a lot of benefit from that one single copy.
Yep.
And also, other thing that is very relevant. Oh, this might be why we're much slower in the string operation. So. All this data that we're manipulating, you know, the string comparison and all this, is in persistent memory, because everything is in persistent memory.
Yeah.
But on their case, that would be a copy of the data
in volatile memory.
Volatile memory.
True. That's a good point. Yeah, it's a copy of the page in volatile memory. That's very true. It's a great observation, yes. Yep. All right. So Leo, I have to go, but it seems like we are making some progress in understanding, you know, what, you know, how the time is being spent across these three different solutions. And I think the last table that you have also tells us a bit more about where is time spent within our solution, right?
Right. So very briefly, the ones that are bold on the left are the functions that I added. So the compare page header, that is a function that does the comparison in the mapping. Remember the mapping from page number to the struct page?
Yeah.
That is a function that does mapping is done with the red black tree, which is why you see the red black tree fine And you see that compare function that is used by the reductive implementation to compare these chapters. And we see that we're consuming a slow percentage.
Yeah, it's very low. I think the most of the time is being spent in the pattern compare and SQLite 3 VBD.
Right.
VBDE.
That's used to implement the like operation.
And this is for all the queries or just one of the queries?
No, this is for the entire test.
The entire test.
Right. Also, I could not run this exam on BNFS because the server is not very functional anymore, Roger. The version of Ubuntu that I installed is no longer maintained, so you cannot update or install any new software. The software that I needed to install to do this analysis, I couldn't install it, so I ran this on my machine. So instead of running this on BNFS, I run it on PentFS.
Yeah, that's no good. Because the PMFS machine simulates a persistent memory access.
Right, but that was the best that I could come up with.
Yeah, I know. I think one thing which you could do is to write to the people who are managing the machine, who's provided you access, and see if they can...
I don't know who these people are.
You don't know, but you have emails from them, right? I don't know them either, but they are the people who are managing this machine.
No, the people that I got an email from are the people who gave me access to the proxy machine.
Yeah.
This machine in particular.
Then it would be Dulur, I think.
What?
It would be Dulur who was managing these machines. So I think you have two reasons to write to Dulur. Someone should be here.
Oh, I didn't know if that was him on the phone.
Yeah.
Okay, right. So yeah. I'm going to work on the presentation and send you a draft.
And I'll set up the... So you're sure about Thursday, right? I'll set it up at 3 o'clock here. So noon time for you.
Let's make it happen, yes.
Okay, I'll do that. All right. Okay. Thanks, Leo.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye now.
I keep forgetting that my...